cambiaré, ¿me entiendes? No cambiaré. Y sería lo mismo si volviera a nacer. Speech, porque no cambiaré, no cambiaré, no cambiaré.
Your names?
Brooke Stansbury.
Alexis Stambelis.
You're the immediate past president, immediate past executive director, and executive director of CISPIS, which is
the Committee in Solidarity with the People of El Salvador.
And this is the big 30 today.
Yep, it's big 30. We have the same birthday, actually, as the FMLN, which is now the leading political party in El Salvador. Both organizations were formed in 1980.
First of all, was there a big power struggle as Alexis overtook you as executive director?
it was fierce. but no, it was a peaceful transition of power, and we still work very closely together. And it's great. Like, you know, CISPIS has an executive director, but I think the model is very much that a lot of different people in the organization share leadership, and so it's a formality in a way, and we're both very fortunate to have been in that position. But I think it's an organization that very much is about developing and sharing leadership.
What was going on in El Salvador 30 years ago to give rise to the FMLN and also in the U.S. to CISPIS?
In 1980, there was just alarming and rising repression from Salvadoran state, especially the Salvadoran military and paramilitary forces against social movement, unions, especially student movement, all of organized campesinos and farmers, all of the social movements in El Salvador that had really been taken to the streets and posing a really powerful challenge to the regime in the late 70s were being disappeared, murdered, you know, by the thousands. And so that was what's happening in El Salvador, including, you know, the repression so deep that they, you know, assassinated the Archbishop of El Salvador, Monsignor Romero, in 1980. And around that same time, the Solidarity Movement was being organized in the United States, led in many ways in the beginning by Salvadoran refugees, many of whom were those very same organizers, union organizers, student organizers, who had fled, made it to the United States, especially in cities like Los Angeles, San Francisco, and D.C., and were educating, organizing to stop the repression, because it was being funded and supported by the millions upon millions of dollars by the United States under the Reagan administration.
Talk about that a bit more, Brooke Stansbury, the U.S. role in funding the, I guess, the right-wing regimes that were ruling in El Salvador.
Well, an unfortunate thing happened in late 1980, right as the FMLN, the leftist political military force in El Salvador was gaining and sort of at one of its heights of power, and that is that Ronald Reagan was elected in the United States, and at that moment the United States began investing that much more money into the Salvadoran regime, into the right wing government in El Salvador. And so it was, you know, the FMLN was very much popular in El Salvador. It was controlling vast, place, you know, big land in the north and east of El Salvador. The FMLN was in control. But because the United States began pumping millions of dollars at the height of the war, $2 million a day that the United States government was pumping into El Salvador and into the Salvadoran military to try try to crush this popular leftist force that was the FMLN. And so it was, you know, it became a standoff. The war went on for 12 years. It would have been over very early on. It would have been over in 1981. The FMLN would have triumphed in the revolution in El Salvador were it not for this huge infusion of military spending on the part of the Reagan administration. And so that was where CISPA stepped in, recognizing that it was that there needed to be this other front, that there needed to be this anti-intervention force to counter the Salvador or the Reagan administration's influence in El Salvador, and so starting, you know, throughout the 1980s, CISPA continued to provide that solidarity and to do everything it could to counter that infusion of money and support by the U.S. government.
Tonight, in one of the videos that was shown at this celebration for the 30th anniversary of CISPIS, we saw folks locking down in front of the Pentagon and other acts of civil disobedience. Talk about some of the actions that have been taken over the years.
Yeah, CISPIS got quite a reputation for having some really radical and militant street actions throughout the 80s, and I think, you know, including shutting down major highways in California and Seattle, shutting down the Pentagon in 1988, huge demonstrations in front of the White House, in front of the Congress. They would sort of because they had cities in over 400 chapters of CISPIS across the United States. So whenever anyone from El Salvador, like the president or military general, sort of came around to the United States, they were dogged by CISPIS activists and Salvadoran activists. And people took pretty tremendous risks, especially Salvadoran refugees who were here. A lot of them were here, you know, without papers even then, because the United States did not actually offer amnesty to that many refugees coming from the war in El Salvador. And so there were people taking very high-risk actions all across the United States throughout the 80s. And I think part of that, my guess would be that it was informed by, you know, so many CISPIS activists and other people, too, had gone to El Salvador on delegations, or they'd heard Salvadoran organizers coming up from El Salvador on tour and sort of understood or tried to understand the tremendous risk that they were taking, you know, with their lives to be organizing, to be part of the FMLN. And I think that inspired people to come up with some pretty, pretty gutsy and creative actions here in the United States.
If you look back over CISPIS's 30 years, and it coincides with the creation of FMLN, which is now in power in El Salvador, do you still see a need for CISPIS going forward?
That's a great question. I mean, when the peace accords were signed in El Salvador in 1992 to put an end to the civil war, a lot of people asked that question. And some people, even on the solidarity side, said, our work is done. You know, this war has been fought to a standstill. We were effective in being able to hold off the U.S. government enough so that the FMLN was able to negotiate a good solution to this war, and we're done. But other people within CISPIS and within the solidarity movement said, no, it's not over. And they recognized that what was happening at that moment was that the U.S. was pushing this new economic model on the rest of Latin America, the sort of free trade neoliberal model. It was on the rise in the 90s, and although there had been a peaceful settlement in El Salvador, this model was still being pushed by the U.S. government with all its might. And so there was still a role for CISPIS, and there continues to be still a role for CISPIS, because as long as the U.S. government is out there pushing an economic model that is not beneficial to the majority of people in El Salvador, in Guatemala, in Nicaragua, and the rest of Latin America, and the rest of the world, there is a role for a solidarity movement. And in particular in El Salvador, because I think it's been sort of a place where the U.S. government has tested out a lot of its policies, from military policies during the Civil War to economic policies post-Civil War. And that's why El Salvador has remained very strategic for the United States government in Latin America and in the rest of the world. It's a tiny country, but it's still very strategic geopolitically, and that's why it's still very strategic to be in solidarity with the revolutionary movement in El Salvador, and that's what CISPIS has continued to do.
Alexis, can you talk about Pacific Rim?
Pacific Rim is a Canadian mining company that was trying to open gold mines in the northern part of El Salvador, and communities there got very well educated, especially by going to Honduras and visiting communities where gold mining projects were already underway, seeing the extreme environmental devastation, tremendous public health impacts, especially on women and kids in Honduras, came back to their own communities and organized to stop the mining projects. And they were very successful in that. They shut down the highways where the mining equipment was coming in. Their protests forced the company to dismantle their drilling equipment. They got the Ministry of the Environment to, you know, actually look at their, you know, quote-unquote environmental impact statement and decide not to allow them to actually start mining. So Pacific Rim, along with another corporation called Commerce Group, which is based in Milwaukee, are both now suing the government of El Salvador for almost $200 million for not giving them gold mining permits. And they're doing this under the rules of CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, which gives tremendous sweeping rights to foreign investors. And it's part of that same, you know, free trade model, quote-unquote development model, to, you know, do anything you can to bring foreign investors in and give them all the privileges that you could even imagine. So, you know, El Salvador is now being sued by these two corporations. It could happen again and again with other companies in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and these same exact kind of cases, which are decided at the World Bank, have happened many, many times under NAFTA to Mexico, to the U.S. and Canada. You know, corporations from one country suing the whole government of another country. And just thinking about El Salvador today, finally having a people-centered government, a government that's working for the needs of the majority, and using the country's resources to provide, you know, agricultural support and uniforms to kids in school and pensions for the elderly and building new health clinics. The money that's being used now in El Salvador is finally being used to meet people's needs. And the thought of that money having to go to pay shareholders in a Canadian mining company that shouldn't have been in El Salvador in the first place is really outrageous. And so CISPIS and a lot of other organizations are, you know, have built this international coalition to stop the suits and really to try to also raise awareness about how the role that free trade agreements are playing in this consolidation of corporate power that we're seeing, you know, in every sector in the United States and throughout the hemisphere. And these cases, the fact that a corporation can sue a sovereign government anytime they pass legislation or even enforce existing legislation that upholds the environment or workers' rights or human rights, is something that we all really need to organize around.
Berg, as you look back on the 30 years of CISPIS's existence and look forward tonight being the celebration of those 30 years, as you look forward, any final thoughts that you want to share?
I mean, I think every time just what an honor it is to be part of an organization like this. It's, you know, here we are. This is the 30th anniversary party. We're here with many compañeros, compañeras, who've been part of the struggle for many years, and also many, many Salvadoran folks who have supported CISPIS and who have fought in the war. And it's just this amazing, like, coming together of forces and of people that makes up this movement and this organization. And so, you know, I think for a lot of us, it was kind of chance that we found our way into CISPIS. You know, we were developing our politics and our identities in the world, and we found this organization at the right time, and we became passionate about it, and it's become sort of our family. And I know for myself and my partner Krista, we actually met through CISPIS and a CISPIS delegation in 2004, and we have a son, Lucas, now, who's also, you know, part of the struggle, and you know, so many of my closest friends and the people that I love most in this world I've gotten to know through this organization and through this work. And so I feel extremely lucky to be a part of this, and here on this occasion of the 30th anniversary, that's what I think of, is I feel very, very honored and lucky to be part of this struggle.
And your final thoughts, Alexis?
Yeah, I mean, it's very incredible to be here 30 years later, and I think a lot of it, you know, is when you go to El Salvador, and I invite anyone to come with us on a delegation to El Salvador, which we do every year, you know, you go and you hear from people whose analysis is crystal clear and make a very clear call for people in the United States to take action and to join an international movement against imperialism and injustice. And I think the thing that's most exciting is to be celebrating this 30th anniversary of CISPIS in a time where the FMLN and the people, you know, are governing in El Salvador, and they have had a long-term vision for how to build a popular movement, how to build popular power, how to build the left, and it's worked. And I think there's a tremendous amount that we in the United States can learn from the social movements in El Salvador, from the FMLN, about how to organize against all the odds, and bigger odds, I think, than we face in El Salvador, to build a successful movement for real social justice and liberation. And it's happening in El Salvador. And again, I invite anybody to come with us next spring or the year after to come see it in action in El Salvador.
Thank you, Alexis. Thank you, Burke. And congratulations on CISPIS's 30th anniversary.
Por doquier, abran las fronteras, porque vengo sin papel. Tampoco traigo corbata, pero sí traigo hambre cruel. Time to break the bonds, there's no time to wait. Too much blood is flowing, there's a sadness in this land. Time to break the bonds. Jobs and justice, inequality for all, inequality for all, inequality for all, inequality for all.